This is the Celtics Talk Podcast coming to you from the Cumberland Farms Lounge at our NBC Sports Boston studios. 244. What? Dude, who wrote this? Who wrote that? 244.
He will read everything.
Sure, I read that. I'm like, hold up here.
I'm coming to you from the Cumberland Farms Lounge at our NBC Sports Boston studios. Two for $4 breakfast sandwiches are happening now at Cumberland Farms. Stop in today and enjoy your favorites. Offer valid on any two $2.39 breakfast sandwiches plus applicable tax. Come on, Drapes.
Does
Syracuse
that
in the house.
Does that count?
Again.
Hey, even the best are allowed to make mistakes.
Especially
right?
when they went to Temple. I know.
A. Sherrod Blakely, Chris Forsberg. And let's give it up for Tom Haberstroh.
Hey! New guy in the building, y'all.
Our NBC NBA insider making the rounds, stopping here in Boston to chat with us. Tom, it's been a couple of weeks.
Yes.
Tell me about being on the job, being part of the family, Mike.
I like everyone here except for Forsberg.
Yes.
Yes.
Everyone.
Hey, Tom,
yes.
who gave you your start when you first came to the Celtics looking for a story about charges? I don't know.
He helped you out?
What?
I told you, John, that my first locker room I ever was in was the Valley of Charges. It was the Shaq Cavaliers. I mean, Shaq was on the Cavaliers.
Oh, boy.
And I was talking to, I believe, Anderson Varejão and Leon Poe, I believe it was, to talk about the Valley of Charges. And I had kind of like a chaperone that, like, room to room, like, showed me around. And it was this guy.
Forsberg.
You weren't even working on the Celtics that season. I feel like it was like you were popping in from the Pats.
Yeah, I think we were, but it was probably coming off the lockout or whatever. So they were bringing me from the Patriots to the Celtics. I was all over the place. And I was just like, you know, all right.
So you owe your career to Chris Forsberg. That's what I'm hearing.
I think that's the moral of the story.
Yeah.
There should be something in the fine print of his contract, Chris.
I know. Get a cut, right?
Come on.
Well, here's the thing. Tom doesn't understand how we do the Celtics Talk podcast. Basically, I'm right. These guys are wrong. Like, right. That's the mission of this podcast, to clown on these guys.
Except when it's about reading copy.
Nah, see, I'm above that, big fella. That's above my pay grade,
period.
You know?
Yeah, reading, you're right. Reading is above your pay grade. You're right.
Hey, Tom, let's talk about the season so far. We're a couple of weeks in. Celtics scuffling a little bit. We're taping this Thursday afternoon. Just where do you see the Celtics at right now?
They're struggling to score the ball. They've obviously gotten hot a little bit here in the last few games. Kyrie finally showed up on the season, cut his hair. Tommy Heinsohn got on him about his weight.
Yeah.
And that's what I guess did the trick. Of all people to like listen to Tommy Heinsohn and be like, you know what? I need to listen to that guy. He is my sensei. It is Kyrie Irving. We've all assumed that. And so it's true is that Kyrie heard that from Tommy, and it's a great story by my former ESPN colleague and current chaperone of all things in my life. Forsberg, you wrote about it. It's true. He kind of listened.
So the first, like, let's rewind here. Is Kyrie is doing the walk off with Abby?
Mm-hmm.
He sounded a little unhappy with
the pissed
fact,
off. Yeah,
little pissed off that Tommy had called him out.
But between that walk off and him getting to the locker room, he probably saw Tommy and said, "Okay, let me."
If you're gonna pick
this.
Your wars, you probably don't want to go for the one guy that, like, as he said, Tommy loves everybody. If you're affiliated with the Celtics, and everyone affiliated or even who likes the Celtics on the periphery loves Tommy, so you can't bash him. It's your good maturity.
It's a losing battle war if you go there.
But I do find it – this is what Kyrie does. He finds motivation in these little things that he'll find an online review. Someone will trash his diet. Like, it's always just something, and it motivates him. And we all wanted to pin it on the hair. It ended up being that Tommy's.
You know, what's interesting, so Tommy first made those comments after the Knicks game. And I'm listening to Tommy. We're doing a post-game show. And he's like, Kyrie looks a little, you know, chubby to me, or however he put it.
And he made reference to it more than once.
Yeah.
Because I was with you guys pregame, and then he was seeing it postgame. I'm thinking like,
I'm like, hold up. Is Tommy really wanting, you know, because usually, you know, sometimes we'll talk about things off camera, and you're not sure whether to bring it up on camera.
Tommy went there.
I'm thinking, whoa, you know, usually you don't hear that. But
then he doubled down a week later.
He doubled down a week later and said it multiple times. But Kyrie agreed
with him. He knew this was coming. The breakout came for Kyrie.
What Tommy was correct about is that, and we're seeing it with Gordon Hayward and we've seen it with Kyrie, is that he was just a step slow. Like, you know, he just didn't have that. I think Tommy phrased it great. Like, he normally last year he'd make a move and he'd get by three guys. This year he hadn't done that yet until that first quarter against the Pistons the other night where he clowned three guys on the way to the basket.
I remember this time last year I went to the Hawks-Celtics game at Atlanta and they were doing MVP chants in Atlanta for Kyrie. That's how hot he was coming into the season. Yeah. And it was interesting to note that this year with all the new Gordon Hayward's on the team, like back on the team, on the floor, that maybe the continuity would help Kyrie and it's like, oh, just pick up where I left off last season. But it's the opposite. You know, this time last year, he came with the new system, the new team, the new organization, and was just guns blazing coming out of the season and getting MVP chance in the first month. And the story that I did for BR last year was the veganism movement that he did to help lose weight. And now we are a year later, and we're asking, wait, did he put on too much weight?
Right.
But they need him to be better because that offense right now is 28th in the NBA. The defense is sensational. They're not just number one in defensive efficiency. They're number one by a wide margin.
Yeah.
So that is the key for this Celtics team is can they score enough? And the average fan would look at the roster and be like Jason Tatum, Jaylen Brown, Kyrie Irving, Gordon Hayward, Al Horford. They're struggling to score, but this is a team that hasn't been able to get to the free throw line, hasn't been able to draw fouls, or getting into the paint has been a little bit of a struggle. And I think that is the big key for them to get back to, hey, let's get back to the finals. They need to do a lot better with scoring.
But, Tom, I think people around here see the Celtics as sort of a West Coast version of the Warriors. But those guys got elite scorers. So what is it that the Celtics need to do to get to that level? Is it more system? Is it the individuals? Can they become the West Coast Warriors? What do you think?
I don't think so. I think this is going to be a defensive-minded team. Brad Stevens just grinded out. All those guys are incredibly versatile defenders. And for the Warriors, you're talking about three of the best shooters of all time, Kevin Durant, Klay Thompson, and Steph Curry. That's a huge gap for them to fill. So Kyrie Irving can be there, and we obviously seen Kyrie Irving win a championship against those guys, but I think this is going to be a defensive-minded team, and the hope for Boston fans that they become a top-10 offense because that's really what it's going to take. Jason Tatum can make the leap. He obviously had a good summer, and I think everyone watched him, what he did in the Eastern Conference Finals, and felt like he was ready to take that next step and become a star in this league. It's been a little up and down, a little bit uneven this season so far. So I think it's just going to take time. Like right now, I think working Gordon Hayward back, there's flashes of old Gordon Hayward. But I looked at the numbers today. His dunk rate is cut in half from his career rate, and his free throw rate, getting to the free throw line, is cut in half. So is that just rust, do you guys think? Or is that actually like this is the new Gordon Hayward on the Celtics?
I think Gordon is trying to figure out exactly how does he fit in. I mean, when he was in Utah, I love the fact that he was much more – versatile than I think he was given credit for. His ability to switch out defensively, and again, he's not an elite defender, but he's not going to crush you when there's a pick and roll that he has to switch out on. I think he's trying to figure out how can I help this team. Kyrie can score with the best of them. Jason Tatum is on the come up. Al Horford is give me whatever I need. Al's going to give that to you. Where exactly do I fit in? And I think he's starting to sense that I just have to give whatever we're not getting that night. Like, I think there's some nights where they're going to need someone to be an aggressive attacking scorer. He needs to be that guy. They're going to need someone who's going to get some rebounds. He needs to be whatever they need to win until he gets himself back to where he's at. One of the things he's talked to me about on a couple different occasions is he's still trying to get that explosion, that ability to just, go from 0 to 60 as opposed to going from 0 to maybe 40, 45 now. When he gets that, I think he'll be a better player. He'll make those explosive plays because we see him now. From one game to the next, he's doing a better job of showing glimpses of what we've seen, but he's not dunking on people. He's not catching a lot of those blocks from the blind side. He's not finishing with an aggressive move at the rim where he's getting contact. Until he starts doing that stuff, he's going to be still in this figure out what the hell do I need to do to help this team mode.
Yeah, and they're double whammy of coming back from the injury and everyone's looking over my shoulder of like, hey, Jaylen Brown and Jason Tatum are right behind you. So, like, the double whammy there I think is responsible for kind of not a bad start for Gordon. I think he's – I think Boston fans would agree that it's good to see him out there and he's actually looking like, he can develop into that all-star, that all-NBA player. But right now, I think all the guys on the Celtics are just – tiptoeing, walking on eggshells.
100%. Mm-hmm. You can just see it. It's almost like they're trying to force it at times for Gordon to get going. And then as soon as Gordon goes to the bench, things start like loosening a little bit, and guys are just letting natural talents take over. I thought it was indicative in Oklahoma City, they pulled him for the last 6 minutes because he hit his minutes limit, and they just, you know, it took some of the pressure off of like, okay, you know, now you don't have to worry about getting Gordon going. It's just like Kyrie can take over. Tatum can be his aggressive self. Like, that's the biggest thing. They've got to define roles, figure out how this is all going to work, and that'll help everybody, but especially Gordon.
I'm curious to see how they're going to handle that night, and you know what's going to come. Where Gordon's going to have it going, Jason Tatum's going to have it going. You're going to get to the fourth quarter. It's going to be a close game. You're going to need Jaylen Brown on the floor for defensive purposes. But you know you can't play those three guys because whoever you're playing, that's just not a good matchup for your five-man group you want out there. Who's going to take a backseat? Who's going to be cool not playing on a night when, statistically speaking, they had it going?
Well, I want to see Gordon Hayward at the four a ton this year just because that opens up the door for both Jaylen and Jason to come out there. So, again, like if Kyrie doesn't have it going and Gordon doesn't have it going, are the young pups going to be like, you know what, I got this? Because that's what they were in the playoffs last year.
Right,
you know?
Right.
They had to be that presence, the number one guy. So do they feel like, you know, even though I feel like our time has come, I still have to be deferential to the vets, the all-stars. Now, it reminds me, the first gig that I had as like a beat writer or in locker rooms was the 2011 Miami Heat. And they, even them, the Dwayne Wade, LeBron James, Chris Bosh Heat, admitted that throughout the entire regular season, they were in their heads taking turns. Mm-hmm. And they were MVP caliber players. So you can imagine even younger guys feeling like, hey, I got to give the ball to Kyrie. It's his turn. Or Gordon Hayward, it's his turn. Right. So I really do think that is something that's – if it's not dominating their head, even a little bit of that feeling can infect their game.
No, I do think that's on their mind, Tom. But if you know Jaylen Brown, he doesn't want to take a backseat to anybody. You know, Jason Tatum feels like the work he put in – there's some who say he's the best player on the team, you know, the workouts that they've had the first month of the season. And so I think trying to balance, you know, being ultra-aggressive, which they were in the postseason, but also welcoming back in Kyrie and Gordon, that's a challenge for these young guys. And then you look like a guy like Terry Rozier, contract year, he trying to get paid, Marcus Morris. And so when Charles Barkley a couple of weeks ago said the Celtics have too much talent, they don't have too much talent, but that will be a challenge, I think, for Brad Stevens trying to manage all that talent, especially all that offensive talent they have.
100%, especially, I mean, the big game from Kyrie the other night aside, like, my question was, coming back from the knee surgery and the knee cleanup and all that, how he would look coming into this season. And so far, it hasn't been like gangbusters, right? It hasn't been amazing, but that also, with Terry Rozier combined with just a lot of the wing players sharing the rock, sharing the minutes. I think there's going to be a lot more drama in Boston this year. It's not going to be all roses, right? Like, I feel like there's going to be a lot more tension in Boston than maybe people from the outside who watch the Eastern Conference Finals are like, oh, they're here. Brad Stevens going to make everything all okay. But they got to get better. They got to hit shots. Their three-point percentage has been awful this year, and they're going to hit shots. Jason Tatum's not going to be, you know, maybe Marcus Smart might be struggling from three-point land. But
not Marcus Smart.
But the name of the game is, do they have an MVP caliber player on this team? Because I know the Toronto Raptors do.
Yep.
I know that the Golden State Warriors have a few of them.
Yep.
And so if they want to get to that championship level basketball, I know that people are going to talk themselves into the depth, right?
Right.
But Charles Barkley has a point, is that although the roster depth is great in the regular season, but once the rotations shrink in the playoffs, who is going to be that number one guy? Mm. Not in the really – the you know – talk radio, like, who's the number one leader on this team or whatever, the assassin. But, like, I do wonder who's going to be that A guy, that A1 guy. They have a lot of B-plus guys right now, but, like, I know Kyrie is going to be in that conversation once he's super healthy.
Well,
but
they need – well, you know Kyrie is going to be that guy, as you pointed out. But they need Gordon and they need Tatum to elevate themselves in the playoffs to be 1A, B, and C. Because if you want to beat Golden State, if you want to compete with them, you got to have three at least.
But let me ask you, Sherrod, do you beat Golden State offensively with your best offensive lineup, or do you beat them defensively? I feel like the Celtics, when you talk about Tatum, Hayward, you got to throw Marcus Smart in there too, because I feel like he's going to be valuable against a team like Golden State.
You got to beat them at both ends of the floor. Yeah. Because offensively, you're not going to be better than them offensively. You know that. I don't care how elite your defense is. You've got to be close as you possibly can be with them offensively, and you've got to outperform them. Your defense has to be better than their defense. Right. You have no shot of beating them if that doesn't happen.
Yeah.
And you're right with the Celtics. I mean, they do have, you know, a Marcus Morris, a Marcus Smart, Terry Rozier, yep. those type of guys who can help, can, I think, defensively they're better from top to bottom than Golden State. But what the Warriors can do from an offensive yeah. kill you in your sleep while you're awake, in your face, behind your back, yep. that's hard. That is hard to just – corral that type of offensive firepower. The Celtics are, I think, about as good as you will see right now at doing that. But is that going to be enough to beat them in a best-of-seven series?
So here's a stat for you. Each of the last 10 NBA champions have all had three All-NBA players on their team.
Three All-NBA.
All-NBA guys.
Not All-Stars, All-NBA.
All-NBA. And the Celtics right now have two in Al Horford and Kyrie Irving. Yeah. Who's going to be that third guy?
Right.
And so, I mean, the right now, the Warriors have five.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So if that's the measuring stick, the Celtics aren't ready. They might be in a couple years. Maybe DeMarcus Cousins isn't there. Maybe KD's in New York. Whatever it is, but if they want to get to that next level of winning a title against this Warriors team, I agree with you. They got to pray that Marcus Smart is on the floor and defending and just catches fire like from 3-point land. And he's done that before, where he just streaking shooter and he's amazing for a couple weeks. That's going to be their prayer, is that they're going to lock down defensively. They're the best three-point defense in 2 years running. The best three-point defense this year, holding opponents to 27% shooting from beyond the arc. And if you're going to beat the Warriors, you need to lock down defensively beyond the arc. And that's what Brad Stevens does.
Is there any historical team you can think of that had – that even in recent memory or whatever – that had the depth that – made them a championship team? Because everyone, or I keep hearing Danny Ainge say it too. He's like, we have to win with our depth. And I'm thinking, same thing you guys do, where you say, well, in the playoffs, you go down to like 8-9 guys. Like, what does it matter if you can go 11 deep in the playoffs? But could they roll out such a defensive force where, like, you know, their second line, Rozier, Smart, Morris, all these guys can defend? Could that possibly lead them to slow down a team like the Warriors?
Yeah, I mean, you just have to catch lightning in a bottle, I guess, and just hope that, like, all the defensive-minded guys become just lights out from deep. And that's the big question is, can you win with depth? And we saw with the Raptors last year, you know, that was the big thing, the bench. And then when push came to shove, it was LeBron. who's your MVP? And if it's not LeBron, then I'm sorry, see ya. So, you know, the Raptors, they changed course. They made the big trade for trading DeMar DeRozan for Kawhi Leonard and, by the way, Danny Green.
People sleep on that Danny Green acquisition.
Ride that train, Drapes. I know, big Danny Green fan.
I'm just saying, a team that needs shooting, Danny Green is perfect for them.
Yeah, and if you look at just offensively, when they're at their best, the Raptors, it's when Kawhi and Danny Green are on the floor. He's just a smart player, veteran, savvy
there
guy,
you go.
Whatever you want to throw. All the cliches about Danny Green, it's true. But
and he's a good quote.
So does Boston have a guy that is good as Kawhi? Like, does Boston have a guy that can go toe-to-toe with Kawhi on both ends of the floor? Right now, the answer is no. Right. And so they have to beat people with depth. I guess, Chris, the only team I would think of maybe is Detroit, but that team, they got star power in droves. Like Chauncey,
that was a good team.
Right, but the thing that made them special, well, two things. The rules for defending were a little bit different then. You could be a little bit more physical. So Mike James, Lindsey Hunter on that team, great.
Valuable guys.
Guys with that skill set in the league right now, they might have some problems being as effective. That team – goes back to the point that Tom made. They caught lightning in a bottle. I mean, they caught a Lakers team that, frankly, just wasn't ready for their toughness. Yeah. But before the Lakers, by the time the Lakers figured out, oh, crap, they're just a really tough team. They were down 3-1, and this thing, it was about to be a five-game sweep.
Yeah.
I just think it's really hard in this day and age to have a team where you're going to win with toughness. That's going to be like the one thing that's going to set you apart. You need talent.
You need skill, right.
I mean, that's why teams are playing so much more positionless basketball. That's why you're seeing possessions where you've got Gordon Hayward bringing up one possession, Al Horford another possession, and hell, every now and then you might see Aaron Baines running thing and initiating offense. That's where we are now. Things that 5, 6, 7, 10 years ago you would have never seen happen.
Wait, speaking of never seen happen, you guys were at the Celtics all year for the past several years, right? Like, where did the Aaron – was he hitting threes in practice that you guys were like,
you know what?
He would practice it every day.
We'd see a few of them go down, but you're thinking, you know what? Listen, when I was in Detroit, Ben Wallace hit threes in practice when there's no one there. So you can't put stock in what guys are doing in an empty gym with a few cameras around. But when he started taking him in games,
I think like Baines and even before that, Amir Johnson, we're all sitting there and like, there's no way he could take that to a game. He's too slow. It takes him
Amir takes him like 20 seconds before he kind of.
But they would make such a high percentage, especially from the corner, and you would just see Brad sitting there like mad scientist, like, we're gonna use that.
Well, yeah, I mean, Brad encourages everybody to. That's what he wants. Everybody to shoot to the three. To have a live shot.
But I think part of that for Brad comes back to, if I'm giving you this freedom, I'm investing in you, I'm showing confidence in you. But the return is, you better do something exceptional.
Let's talk about the Eastern Conference, though. Is Toronto the number one team right now, you
think? For me, yes. And the big question mark coming in was, how good is Kawhi going to look? And he looks phenomenal. So, you know, I recognize the fact that he is taking days off to make sure that his knee is healthy or his thigh or whatever you want to call it. The leg is healthy. doing DNP rest a week into the season. But that shows me that the Raptors are all about May and June, right? They want to preserve Kawhi. It's not enough to get off to a hot start. They don't mind. They are all about the playoffs and making sure they take that next level because they've seen what 60 wins can get you.
And
like, they want to get to that next level with Nick Nurse, who orchestrated the offense and got Kawhi Leonard. Like, that is the number one team in my book.
Yeah, two things. What I like that Nick has done is he's figured out that Serge Ibaka is so much better if I don't have him out there with Valanciunas.
Yeah,
he's
yeah.
so much yeah, better. Yeah. And I thought they were missing that when you look at DeMar DeRozan and you look at Kyle Lowry and just how great they were, you always felt like they need one more guy to just kind of elevate his game to maybe not their level, but at least pretty close to it. And you thought Serge was going to be that guy. And we're all trying to figure out, why is Serge not being that guy? And when you take Valanciunas out of the equation, you're like, oh, okay, I get it. That makes sense. The one thing about Toronto that makes me a little bit nervous is that with Kawhi, they are – just a load. Without Kawhi, not so good.
Yeah.
And to me, if I'm Toronto, you don't want to think about that, but the reality is you are a significantly different / weaker team without him than you are with him. And if you're playing a team like the Celtics, they already know that they can win without one of their top aces. Now, can they do it again? It remains to be seen. But you've got guys who, if they're put in those roles, they know they can get through it and be successful. In Toronto, I almost feel like they have to – some of these games that he's missing, particularly against elite teams like when they played Milwaukee, they got to put up a better showing than we saw. That, for me, I need to see them do better without Kawhi and to really feel like they're going to be one of the last
teams. Why do you need to see that, Sherrod? You anticipated Kawhi getting hurt? That's like saying, oh, you know, I want to see the Warriors without Kevin Durant. I want to see the Lakers. No. Kawhi's going to be there. We're talking
You act as if there's no precedent for Kawhi missing significant time. Last time I checked, he played 1, 2, 3, 4, 9 games last year.
That was last year.
And you bring up Golden State? Trapes. I think we've established that they've got a guy named Steph Curry, a guy named Klay Thompson, named Kevin Durant.
My point without is, Kawhi Leonard, the Raptors aren't good.
My point is,
Sherrod, you're talking the top five player in the league.
Let me just make this real quick point. We're talking about a team in Toronto that has one guy that without him, they are significantly weaker and can't win. Right. You're talking about a Celtics team that has two or three guys that are elite, but this team has shown that they can win without those guys.
If Kawhi gets hurt.
Let's not act as if that's something that's completely out in left field.
Okay, I just came from Philly.
Mr. Wright.
I came from Philly. just the other day, I was in Philly, and the big question was, who is there going to be their third star? Okay? Like, is Markel ready to take that leap? No.
Sorry.
Is Covington, I mean, he's a good defensive guy on the wing.
Last year's playoff says no.
Right. So the thing that has Celtics, should have Celtics fans excited is the fact that the Wizards don't have a third guy. The 76ers don't have a third guy. And the Raptors, to your point, Sherrod, like, if Kawhi steps off the floor, even if it's just a substitution and not because of an injury, is Kyle Lowry and X good enough to maintain that kind of firepower? Right. Now, they don't have a big three. I think the Celtics have a better candidate for their big three than any other team in the East. So that's the thing that they got going for them, because the Raptors are pretty top heavy, which is weird to talk about now. But with Kawhi Leonard and Kyle Lowry, who is that going to be that third star for them? Right. And Jonas or Serge Ibaka, like maybe. Anunoby, maybe. But ultimately, if Kawhi's healthy, if Kawhi is fresh for the playoffs, which is another question mark for me, is if he's not going to play the entire year last year, is his body ready to go for a 100-game season? And what's clear is the Raptors don't believe he's ready to do that because they're already resting him. So the Raptors are number one for me. Celtics number two. And we got to talk about the Milwaukee Bucks now. Yeah, obviously, tonight.
The number one seed in the East by the end of the season.
Milwaukee? Yeah.
Take that victory lap.
Wait, Chris. Is this a take now?
Come on, Forsberg. Take that victory lap.
Really?
Because I feel like receipts. Do you have receipts?
I do. We can go dig up the podcast receipts. I have Celtics and Bucks in the East Finals because I felt like the Celtics and Raptors were both going to ease into the year. They're going to be very cautious with their bodies. And I just feel like the Bucks are trying to assert themselves as that other team in the East.
Like Budenholzer with the Hawks.
Exactly. They should. So maybe they should be looking at Toronto and going, they've been there. They understand why they're not going so hard. Like you'd think Mike would maybe throttle down and try and like teach his team, all right, this is a long season. This isn't how we need to operate. But I just think they're so young and there's such a desire for that Milwaukee team to prove themselves that they're just naturally they're going to be the one team, I think, in the East that's going to win 60 games. They're going to have home court, and I just don't know if it's going to matter because at some point they're going to run into Celtics and the Raptors.
I want to like the Bucks, and there's some guys on the team I do like, other than Antetokounmpo, obviously. But, gosh, Eric Bledsoe just even before the whole Terry Rozier, Scary Terry, and all that nonsense, he was a guy that – I want more out of him. I want more consistency out of him. He's been in the league, to me, long enough to where he shouldn't be all over the map the way he is as a player.
I don't think he is the 20-point scorer that Phoenix tried to make him into be. I feel like he's not Andre Iguodala, but I feel like he's a defensive-minded guy who shouldn't have the ball to go get 25 a night. And I feel like he's in that mold.
Right.
Whereas with the Bucks, they don't need him to be that guy anymore. With Chris Middleton, who has been awesome this year.
My guy.
Now this – to your blueprint, your playbook for the Milwaukee Bucks is playing out exactly how you expected. Is now they're going to talk themselves in, now that they're 7-0 and playing great basketball. And by the way, they're leading the NBA in 3-pointers. Who would have thought? Right. The Milwaukee Bucks with the only real addition being Brooke Lopez is now
shooting threes.
Who is now leading? the stat is that Brooke Lopez on the Celtics would be their leading 3-point shooter.
That's amazing.
In terms of makes. Oh, wow. He's made more 3-pointers than anybody on the Celtics this season. So it's early, but this is playing exactly how you expect it. Is like they're going to get off to a hot start, and then they're going to double down and say, we belong here. And the rest of the East is like, yo, just wait until the postseason. So, Giannis, even with Giannis not being a three, I think he's 1-for-17 from deep or something like that. He's trying to be the pull-up guy, but even without that, they're blowing the doors off of people offensively.
Because I think they've got the largest plus-minus of any team in the NBA right now. It's like +14 or something like that, and the Celtics, I think, are like +4. And that's what makes Milwaukee, to me, early on at least, a very scary team, the fact that they're playing at a high level at both ends of the floor. You look at their scoring defense, you look at their defensive rating, you look at their offensive rating, they rank among the best in the game.
They're doing it both
ends. They're getting it done at both ends. Yeah. And the thing that they're doing that I like is the fact that when you think about defense, for so many years we've been conditioned to think that, well, if you're a good defensive team, you've got a guy in there that's blocking all these shots. They don't do it that way. They're built – all that damn length that John Harris –
How dare you say that about Brooke Lopez? How dare you?
Brooke.
Say that to his face tonight.
I will.
Actually, you know what? I'm fine with that.
I'm not thinking about it. No, but they're great – they use their length so effectively defensively. And the Celtics in many ways are like that as well. You don't need to have a great shot blocker to have a really strong line defensively. I mean, Aaron Baines, he ain't pinning nobody's stuff on the glass, but he's not letting you score on him either. You may try to dunk on him, but he's not – they're a team that's built on just solid defense, using their length, using their size, and not necessarily having to block a ton of shots to get it done.
Tom, before we get out of here, Kyrie's future.
Yeah.
Says he's coming back.
Drapes doesn't believe.
I'm setting it up. This is called setting it up. Let me run this show.
You guys can say it back. As long as you don't have to read it. Just say it. You're good. Okay.
Professed his love for the city, the franchise.
All that good stuff.
With that being said, you got a young guy in Rozier coming up. Kyrie struggled the first 5-6 games of the season. And there were whispers out there among the fans, some of the fans. Let Kyrie go. Have Rozier as your start. What do you think about Kyrie, his future, Boston, all that?
Man,
I see the look on your face. I know what you're going to say, but I'm going to let you
say it. Wow. Drapes Stradamus is in the building. Drapes Stradamus. Okay.
I feel the same way about Klay Thompson, where people are saying he's going to go back to L.A., but I don't see it because he has a great situation there. Like, I feel like Kyrie Irving has a great situation with Boston. Like, he was hurt in the playoffs, and yet people still loved him. And I know Terry Rozier had a great postseason, but, like, he's got everything made here. I really do feel like if he goes back to – people like to talk about the Knicks and, like, go back home and all that. I'm tired of this whole, like, coming home narrative. Like, it's worked for a lot of people.
Who has it done? Right, like,
LeBron
and that's it, right?
Like, it's hard for some guys to go back home and maintain, like, a lot of the good vibes that they have. I feel like the grass is always greener, no pun intended, but, like, this is a situation for Kyrie that I feel like he loves the coach, he loves the city, and if he goes to New York, I feel like it's back to – a lot of, you know, kind of the thornier things about being a star in this league that I don't really think that's what he's seeking. So I think this with Boston, he doesn't have to be. And if he looks at like Jason Tatum and Jaylen Brown coming up, like he might look at this and say, I don't have to be the superstar for the next, you know, 10 years and carry this entire franchise on my back. I've got these other guys who are here and Gordon Hayward.
I think he's interested in having a legacy that is both in the now and future. And right now, he's the best player on the team. He can lead them to a championship. When he's on the backside of his career, he can still be part of a championship team. He has the potential to have one of those careers that has 2, 3, 4 titles in it and him not having to be the absolute best player every year. I mean, we forget he's only 26 years old.
He's a grizzled 26, though.
Right. Well, right, but which means he probably has, I mean, realistically, 2, 3, maybe 4 really, really strong years left. And Tatum will be, what, 23, 24 around then?
17.
Right. Exactly. And that's my point. So, I mean, that's what I'm saying. I mean, he has the ability to still be a dominant, high-impact, championship-caliber force now while still paving the way for those young fellas to come and take over, where he can kind of kick back a little bit and just let them kind of lead the charge while he's still involved.
As long as he can talk himself into that, and he seems to be doing it this year.
Right.
That night he had 3 points in Detroit, but he was getting into the paint and spraying it out. Like, if this new Kyrie can embrace the fact that he's not going to score 20 points a night, that it might be, you know, there'll be nights like last night, the other night where he went for 31, but more often than not, if he's at 15, 20 a night, can he be okay with being a distributor? Can he be better with, like, trying to be a decent defender? Can he chase those rebounds like we saw in Oklahoma City? If that's the Kyrie you can get and he's cool with it, then he pay him all his money, let him be that guy.
And if ever we have any issues with Kyrie, we'll just talk to Tommy, tell him he needs to lose weight.
Exactly.
Boom.
But here's the thing about Kyrie. For the Celtics to win, though, he has to be the best player on the team, no doubt. He can't be 15 point per game Kyrie.
He can as long as it's that's what they need that night.
I disagree, Chris. When you go against Golden State, all those guys, it's not like, well, last year in the finals, Steph did have a couple of down games. But I feel like offensively, this team needs Kyrie to be elite
in the
NBA finals.
I think their hope is that by the time they get to those finals, that Jason Tatum is just a beast now and that Jaylen Brown's ready to take over. And then you can have that balance where Kyrie doesn't feel that pressure every night. But I agree, there's going to be nice because they're just so young and they just don't have that consistency yet where he's going to have to be able to go to that next level. Yeah. And that's what I want to say. We saw it the other night. He has to be able to consistently be like, all right, I need to step up for my team, and I can go back to that old Kyrie.
You got to have the elite diversity that you see in Golden State if you're Boston. You're going to have nights where Kyrie is, as you point out, the best player, not just on the Celtics, but on the floor. Mm-hmm. They're going to need that. But in the back of your mind, you know that Tatum's going to have some nights like that too. Big Al, we love, you know, the little 12, 13 points and 6, 7 rebounds, but some nights we're going to need 20 and 12, mm-hmm. and Terry Rozier. We know you're taking a backseat to Kyrie, but you might have to come off the bench and give us 17. And Marcus Morris, you know, we love the fact that you like to get in guys' heads, but you need to give us that 45, 50% shoot from three-point range, give us 12, 14 points, and good defense on a Kevin Durant type. It has to be team. Danny Ainge's point about depth, it has to be their calling card because they don't have a team that's built around one guy who can carry them to a championship. They don't, or two guys for that matter. Whereas Golden State, you got 4 or 5.
Yeah.
So
it would also help if Kyrie would lose 5 pounds.
No, he's lost like 4.5, so he's getting there. He's getting there.
Maybe Tommy can tweak him again when the April 15th rolls around or whatever.
If he has back-to-back bad shooting games, we just say, look,
just
Tommy,
go blast
your boy.
Him on TV again.
He's going to be a skeleton, and Tommy's going to be like, look, you're in a slump right now. You got to lose some weight.
Tom, Celtics Warriors in the finals. Are you putting that out there yet or no?
Oh wow! Yeah, all things equal, like tape. Health, all that. Celtics in the finals. Yeah,
that man knows how to pander
exactly,
to a new market,
right? I'm sure, he said Sixers the other
don't,
day.
Yeah, don't hold me to. Don't look at the tapes of what I said in right. In Philly
what
and Washington.
Tapes?
Yeah.
All right, Tom Haverstraw, good stuff, man. Thanks for putting up with us. This is how we do it here on the Celtics Talk podcast. Make sure you subscribe on all your favorite podcasting apps. Make sure you like it, review, give us all kinds of love.
And download the My Teams app.
Oh, yeah.
See,
dude,
now
where's
the
read for that? I was supposed to have a read for
because
the
we
My
know
Teams
what
app.
You and Reed are about, Drapes.
Live reads, you know, come on.
Hey, you got slow over here. Darn it. I should have remembered that. All right, guys, good stuff today. Thanks for joining us on the Celtics Talk podcast. And download that My Teams app.
Thanks for having
me. We're out. Let's go.